Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. Have you ever been to Utah? I've driven through it dozens of times when I take road trips from Arizona to Idaho to visit my family. And there are some fascinating places along my route, such as the dark red rocks and cliffs that surround Kanab in the southern part of the state, the gorgeous drive between Kanab and Panguitch on Highway 89, and Butch Cassidy's childhood home farther up the road. And there's Fremont Indian State Park near Richfield, the endless drive from one end of Salt Lake City metro area to the other, the soaring Wasatch Mountains, and beautiful Bear Lake that straddles Utah and Idaho in the northeastern part of the state. And let's not forget the heavy concentration of national parks and monuments in the southern part of the state. Zion, Bryce Canyon, Capitol Reef, Canyonlands, and so much more. And while all of these places have astounding landscapes that will leave you speechless, they also have extraordinary dark skies with tremendous views of the Milky Way. Salt Lake City is an obvious exception when it comes to the views of the night sky, but there is a hidden gem nearby, and it's a certified international dark sky park. I'm talking about Antelope Island State Park, and it's just to the northeast of the capital city, jutting out into the Great Salt Lake. It's just far enough away from the city and then looks west into near complete wilderness, and it gives it amazing skies for stargazing. Tonight, I'm joined by Wendy Wilson, the assistant park manager at Antelope Island State Park, which is one of Utah's largest and most visited parks. She was instrumental in the park receiving its designation as an international dark sky park in 2017. She's been with Utah State Parks for over 22 years, spending 15 of those years as a park naturalist, where she educated the public about the value of the natural resources in the park's public areas. And one of the resources often overlooked is the natural dark skies. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Wendy Wilson. Wendy, thank you so much for joining me on the Night Sky Tourist podcast from Antelope Island in Utah.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
So I think the first question people are going to want to know is, where is Antelope Island located?
Right. Great question. So Antelope Island State Park is in Utah. It's in northern Utah. We are about maybe 50 minutes to an hour north of Salt Lake City, out in basically the Great Salt Lake Basin.
And when I look at a map of the area and I look at the Great Salt Lake and all that, it doesn't look like it's an actual island. It looks like it's connected by land. So is it an actual island?
When the lake levels are at their, what used to be, I guess I'll say their average depth, it was completely surrounded by water. So it has been definitely in the past, in the recent past, an island. Right now, and often through the year, it is a peninsula. Great Salt Lake is very shallow, and so as lake levels increase and decrease, the level of whether it's an island or not kind of changes. So right now, we're definitely not an island. Great Salt Lake, and I mean the whole West is in a huge drought, so the levels of Great Salt Lake have drastically dropped. So we are right now just kind of part of the lake bed.
I know that when people talk about visiting the Dead Sea, they talk about when they go swimming, they can float. Do people swim in the Salt Lake? And if they do, can they float?
Absolutely. So the salinity levels are about 15 to 16%, as opposed to, so like the Dead Sea on average is about 30%. There are areas of Great Salt Lake that are right around 28 or 29%. But the area closest to Great Salt Lake is right around 16%, 15% salinity. So definitely buoyant enough that you can just go out and float. So yeah, you can definitely do that.
Oh, that sounds cool. You don't have to fly so far to have that experience.
Right, exactly.
I'm always curious about who the original inhabitants of places are. And
Yeah.
so who lived there before white men showed up in that region?
Yeah, so the area in northern Utah is basically the kind of the ancestral land of the Goshute, the Shoshone, even further back to the Fremont peoples of Utah. So a little bit further south you get into the kind of the Ute, and then further south you get into the Navajo in southern Utah. But northern Utah was the Goshute and Shoshone nations.
Yeah, you mentioned Fremont. I actually visited Fremont Indian State Park a couple
Oh,
of
cool.
weeks ago, and
Yeah.
that was tremendous. I'm hoping to do a podcast episode on that too, but that
Nice.
was pretty spectacular. So
Yeah.
they were clear up in your area then.
There have been evidence and archaeological kind of digs and things that have shown artifacts as far back as maybe like 9,000, 10,000 years ago, not on Antelope Island, but in this
Wow.
area. So, yeah, so it goes back pretty far. And I mean, obviously further than that, but I'm sure.
You know, when I tell people about Antelope Island and I tell them that it's an international dark sky park, they're always really surprised because Salt Lake City is not very dark sky.
Right.
In fact, for anyone who's ever driven through Salt Lake City, that is one long metro area.
It really is.
Yeah, so there's just lights for over an hour's worth of driving.
Yeah, because so Salt Lake City itself is just south of us, but like you were saying, kind of that metro area along what we call the Wasatch Front, along the Wasatch Mountain Range, basically extends from Ogden, which is a little bit north of us, all the way down through Provo, which is about 2 hours south of us. So yeah, so it's a big area, probably 2 million people along that stretch. And to be honest with you, when I first heard about the International Dark Sky Association dark sky parks and places designations, I thought that's really cool, but there's no way we would ever be able to qualify for that because of the lights along the Wasatch Front. So Antelope Island is about 7 miles west of that Wasatch Front area, kind of separated from part of the Great Salt Lake Bays and then out into the lake. But I had a colleague reach out and say, "Hey, I think that you would qualify. I think that you should at least try." So I did. So I kind of went through the steps. I took dark sky measurements, and surprisingly, so at the time, dark sky, the International Dark Sky Association utilized a tiered system. So gold, silver, and bronze levels of classification. And at the time, we qualified as a bronze level dark sky park. And so I went ahead and submitted the application and was we received that designation. So because the west side of Antelope Island looks out over the majority of Great Salt Lake, it looks to the west. There's very little anything to the west of Antelope Island out in the lake and further. So that side of the island is very dark. And then to the east, of course, is the Wasatch Front. But when you look straight up, you still have great views of the Milky Way. You can still see a lot of the deep sky objects. And so it's while you do see, if you look to the east, you do see that extensive light dome of mainly Ogden and Salt Lake City. As you look west, you get really those really amazing dark sky views. So yeah, we are next to that great big metropolitan area. And right now, the qualifications, we wouldn't have qualified at this point if we were to apply today because they have increased those standards. But we were grandfathered in. And so as long as we can maintain those levels, which we're doing our part, on the island itself, but there's not a lot we can do about what's going on the Wasatch Front. So we try to do the education and help people, make those changes themselves with a little bit of encouragement and help and guidance from the IDA and from the park.
What kind of experience are they going to have out there? What kind of things are they going to see? What can they do?
Yeah, so during the daytime, one of the main things that people come to visit Antelope Island for is the lake. So right now it is not as great to get into because it is kind of a long walk because it's so low. But we are home to 750 free-ranging bison, mule deer, pronghorn antelope, coyotes, 250 species of birds. And so people come a lot of times for the wildlife viewing opportunities. And then we have about 40 to 50 miles of non-motorized trails for horseback riding and mountain biking and hiking. We also have several campgrounds that people love to come to. If you want to especially come and stay the night and enjoy the night sky, that's a great way to do that. And then there's a lot of history. We do have a historic ranch that was utilized both by the native peoples that lived here as well as by the European settlers that came to the area. They used that area because there are some pretty big freshwater springs down there. They set up kind of a settlement down there. So we've got a ranch down there where we talked about some of that history. Lots of recreation that you can do out here.
I'm curious because I really love bison. In fact, I just came back from a trip to Montana and Wyoming where I was driving by myself and I bought a little wood carved bison to travel in the car with me. And so I'm curious, are bison native to that area?
They are. There is evidence that they were definitely in Utah to some extent. They were on Antelope Island. There's some of the historical or native digs that some of the digs that we found had some bison bones in some of those fire pit kind of pits. But yeah, bison were native to the area until, I mean, probably 1800 when the bison kind of population was pretty much kind of crashed and almost went extinct. And then they were reintroduced in 1893 by the folks that kind of lived and worked out here on Antelope Island.
So, what else makes the island special? People come obviously for the wildlife. You have the dark skies. Do you have dark sky programs that people can participate in?
Yeah, we do. So people come for it's really, really cool to be, along the Wasatch Front in that huge metropolitan area and then come across the causeway, which is the road that connects the mainland to the island. And then you're suddenly almost a world away, it feels like. It's not super developed. You've got expansive views across the island, across the lake. You've got really cool geologic features. The rocks are just kind of rugged and raw, and that whole feeling of a natural, raw, rugged landscape, desert landscape, is appealing to a lot of folks. Folks that don't, we've had people often come to Antelope Island that have lived in the area their whole lives, and they'll come out and just be so in awe of what they experience while they're out here. They'll say, I've lived in Utah my whole life. I've lived here for 50 years and I've never been out here. And this place is amazing. And it's because of that, I think, just that openness and that expansiveness and that feeling of remoteness so close to the Wasatch Front. And then, yeah, we do several dark sky programs throughout the year. We partner with the Ogden Astronomical Society to do star parties once a month through the summer. And those are basically are open to the public. Folks can just come out. The members of the Ogden Astronomical Society will set up their telescopes and then just point at various deep space objects and then talk to people about those things. We'll do other just astronomy programs, things that we call star hopping, kind of like what you do. You're just, what's in the sky tonight and what can you see and how can you find it? And so we do a lot of those different things. We do scorpion walks and we do moonlight or full moon hikes and we do no moon hikes. And so a lot of things to help people experience the park, after the sunset. The sunset itself is beautiful and amazing and one of the best, I think, anywhere because it is the sunset out across the lake. And the high mineral content of the lake really adds that reflection. So it's just really deep and it's just, I often think of it and the word that comes to mind is that it's liquid gold out across the water. It's just beautiful. So all of those things are definitely reasons that people love to come and explore Antelope Island.
I think hiking is something that a lot of people don't really think about, and it is such a magical experience. I lead some stargazing hikes in the town where I live, and I think people are so surprised at how bright the moon can be. I usually do first quarter hikes, so it's not even a full moon, and they're so surprised how they can see their shadow at night. But yeah, that's such a magical experience, and that would be so cool to see with the reflection in the lake.
Yeah, it really is.
So getting to your park is going to be a little different than just driving off of a freeway or whatever, because you have the causeway. So what should people know about getting out to your park?
So the best way obviously is through I-15, Interstate 15 that runs north and south through Utah. And there's an exit, it says Antelope Drive exit. And then you'll have to pass through the towns and cities that are between the freeway and the causeway. So it's about 7 miles before you get to our toll booth, our entrance booth. And then from there, it's another 7 miles out across the lake bed to the island. So you're about 14 miles from the freeway out to the island itself. You can expect traffic and food and restaurants along the way. And then once you hit the entrance booth, it's just lake bed on both sides. You will eventually get to the water and you'll see the water on both sides and then the island itself.
And then what is the fee for entrance on the causeway? And
It's $15 per vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and part of that is a causeway toll. The causeway is actually managed by Davis County, and so we collect a small fee as part of that entrance fee that goes towards maintaining that road. So it's $15, and then that gets you out onto the island.
How can people find you online, and what are some maybe resources that online that people want to get their hands on before they come?
Sure, there's a few. So our website is antelopeisland.utah.gov. And on that website, we have upcoming events, we have park history, we have frequently asked questions, we have information for educators, which is just great information for anybody who's curious about learning more. There are some links in there for that. And so that's a great place to just get started. It lists our hours, it lists phone numbers, it lists directions on how to get here and fees and all of that. We are also on Facebook. If you search for Antelope Island State Park on Facebook, we are there and we post a lot of our events and activities online there as well as Instagram, and we do a little bit on Twitter. So if you just, search for Antelope Island State Park, there is Antelope Canyon, and that is not the same thing. A lot of folks will tag Antelope Island while they are in Antelope Canyon down in Arizona. We do not have the red rocks. We don't have those really cool things on Antelope Island. So Antelope Island State Park is what you're searching for on those social media sites.
Yeah, I think Antelope Canyon are those famous slot canyons down there.
Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. But you won't find those out here at Antelope Island State Park.
Wendy, thank you so much for sharing with us about your park and your dark skies. And I hope that people really take some time to go visit if they're in the area of Salt Lake City or driving through Utah like I do frequently. Take the time to go over and plan a fun evening under the stars there.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one more note, you don't have to camp in order to enjoy the night sky. We do have gates that close at 10 p.m., but they will open automatically when you leave. So if you wanted to come in and enjoy the night sky for an hour or two and then leave the island, you'll be able to do that.
Okay, so just arrive before 10 p.m.
Arrive before 10. Yep.
Wendy, thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Are you following Night Sky Tourist on Facebook or Instagram yet? And if not, what are you waiting for? This is a great place to get little tidbits that I don't share anywhere else. It's also a fun place to interact and chat. Look for Night Sky Tourist on Facebook and Instagram, and then share it with others who you think would enjoy posts related to the night sky. Once you find me, be sure to say hi and let me know that you listen to the podcast. It's time for our tour across the night sky. So pause the podcast, get everybody in your house, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Tonight, we're going to focus our attention on the circumpolar constellations, And that just means the constellations that circle around Polaris, or the North Star. Most of the time when I ask people, how do you find the North Star? They tell me that it's the brightest star in the sky. So let's take a moment and look around the sky and see if you can identify the two brightest objects other than the moon. The brightest one tonight is going to be towards the east a bit, and it's Jupiter. If you can look at it with binoculars or a backyard telescope, you'll be able to spot a few of its moons. Now look a bit westward from there and you'll find Saturn. Again, binoculars or a telescope will let you see its beautiful rings. And if you can't decide which star is Saturn, use a stargazing app to help you find it. So my point is that clearly the North Star is not the brightest star in the sky. So let's look towards the north. There are two constellations that are always visible in the night sky, no matter what the season is. You might have buildings or landscapes that can block your view sometimes, but they are there every night. And the most well-known of those two is the Big Dipper. It's fallen a little bit closer to the northern horizon at this time of the year, especially in the earlier evening hours. But when you spot it, it's going to look like it's tipped slightly, like someone's pouring something out of it. Now look at those two stars that make up the outer edge of the Dipper. And you can use those to help you find the North Star. So if you draw an imaginary line from the bottom one to the top one, and then extend it out about 3 times that distance, and you're going to see the North Star. Now the North Star, which has the name Polaris, is at the tip of the Little Dipper. And the Little Dipper is really difficult to see under light polluted skies, so don't be surprised if you can't see the whole thing. Another constellation that can help you find the North Star is Cassiopeia. And you can find that in the northeastern sky tonight. And it looks like a sideways W. Can you spot it? Now, look at the Big Dipper, and then look at Cassiopeia, and then find the star that's almost exactly between the two. And make sure that it lines up with those two stars that make up the outer edge of the Dipper. And then you'll know that you're looking at the North Star. The Big Dipper and Cassiopeia are called circumpolar constellations. And if you were to camp under the stars and stay awake all night tonight, you'll notice that these two constellations gradually rotate around the North Star. And they go in a counterclockwise motion, because our Earth is spinning and making it look like that's what they're doing. You can also use Cassiopeia to find the Milky Way. If you look toward the southern horizon, you can see Scorpius. Can you see it, the giant scorpion? Now look a bit to the east of it to find the teapot-shaped asterism, and that's part of Sagittarius. Now imagine steam rising from the spot of that teapot. And draw an imaginary line from the spout over the top of your head and all the way over to Cassiopeia. That's where you're going to find the Milky Way. But if you're under light polluted skies, you might not be able to see any of the Milky Way at all, which is the case for about 80% of the people on Earth, unfortunately. Okay, you've identified the circumpolar constellations, Jupiter and Saturn. So let's spend a little bit of time tonight learning about the constellation Capricornus. It's one that people don't talk about much because light pollution can make it really tricky to find. So you might need to use your stargazing app on your phone to find it. Capricornus is a Latin name meaning horned goat or goat horn. He represented this mythological creature that was half goat and half fish. It's located in an area surrounded by other water-related constellations like Aquarius and Pisces and others. A good telescope can show you globular star clusters and galaxies in the region of Capricornus. In one area, there are 3 galaxies that could merge into an enormous spiral galaxy millions of years in the future. Capricornus has one of the oldest mythological associations. Its lore as half goat and half fish dates back to the ancient Babylonian days almost 5,000 years ago. The goat fish was a symbol of their god, Ea. In Greek mythology, the constellation is associated with Amalthea, the goat that nursed the infant Zeus after his mother, Rhea, had saved him from being devoured by his father, Cronos. Amalthea's broken horn was transformed into a cornucopia, or a horn of plenty, which is something we decorate our homes with during the fall today, and it's a symbol of abundant harvest. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to all the things mentioned in this episode, or visit nightskytourist.com/48. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me, and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.